Hi, Lulav.
Hey, Jazz. Welcome to season two.
I'm so excited that we're starting season two.
Yeah, and also sitting face to face, which is kind of wild.
Wild. It's the first time we've recorded an episode in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm real excited about that. Slightly nervous for our audio, but we'll see how it goes.
Uh-huh.
Lulav, do you want to tell the people about what we're doing for season two?
Well, for season two, we are doing a Haftarah cycle, which should be pretty fun.
So the reason Lulav emphasized that is last season we went through the whole Parsha cycle. And the Parsha cycle is like very straightforward.
And also the entire Torah.
Right. It's just the Torah broken up into divisions. That's literally what Parsha means, is division. And so, and so this time we're doing excerpts from prophets and writings from Nevi'im and Ketuvim that have been compiled into what's called the Haftarah cycle. But there's a bunch of different Haftarah cycles that different people use that depends on whether you're Ashkenazi, you're Sephardi, you're Yemeni, you're from any other place in the world, and also sometimes varies intra-communally. So there's different Ashkenazi traditions. When we were double-checking which Haftarah portion we were going to do today, there were three different options that we looked at.
Or more?
At least three options.
So we're going to try and let you know ahead of time what we're reading for the week. And also, once we have a website, we'll have the entire schedule on our website.
Also, that's a thing we're going to have now for season two, is we're going to have a website, which is very exciting.
Kosherqueers.gay, which I can say with fortitude because I did buy those domains, so nobody's going to scoop us.
It's very exciting. We will also refer briefly to what's happening in the Parsha, because often the way that the Haftarah portion is decided is that it is loosely thematically connected to the week's Parsha. So one of us will still do the short summary that you know and love of the Parsha, but then we won't go through it. We'll go through the Haftarah instead. And also, because it could be from anywhere in Nevi'im and Ketuvim, we'll like tell you a little bit about what's going on around it, since you won't have the context from the previous weeks.
You may notice that we're not doing a short summary of the Haftarah portion. And that's because if you look at the readings, they're like 20 lines long.
Yeah, they're real short.
For contrast, the Parsha that I'm going to be summarizing today is 6 chapters and 8 lines long.
The Haftarah is much shorter, but also there's less commentary on it, so I'm excited to dive in. Also, I'm excited for this week because it's real gay.
Right.
Yeah, so Jazz, has anything cool and queer or Jewish happened to you this week?
Well, as aforementioned, we're recording in person this week, which is to say, Lulav came to visit me in New York, so we're recording in my little New York apartment.
It's not as little as I was expecting. It's less long, but it's also way more wide. I was picturing my dorm room from freshman year of college.
Oh, it's really not that bad.
Yeah, which is different in that we're not trying to fit 2 separate beds in there, but also I did not cozy up to my roommate for snuggles, so...
Also, I imagine my room just kind of looks more like a home than a dorm room does. But who knows?
Yeah. That's fair. Jess has a lot of really cool wall hangings, which probably we've not really talked about on the podcast.
No, probably not. I have all of my sticker walls up, and I have a blessing that I drew and illustrated myself, and some photographs, and a wall of, like, plant-related art and some knitted
stuff. Wait, you do that?
Yeah.
What? Oh, dang! I didn't realize that. I thought that was, like, produced by something.
No. I made it.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shekacha Be'olamo.
Really close.
Shekacha Lo Be'olamo. We're gonna pretend I did that in one take.
Great.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Anyway, it's been a delight to have Lulav here. We have done a number of things that have been both exceedingly Jewish and exceedingly gay, including a really lovely Shabbat dinner with all of my friends.
Okay, I think what we should do is each pick one thing.
Because
we are recording an episode tomorrow.
Not from the future, we super didn't.
Okay, fine. You go first then.
Well, today we took a trip to Hasidic Crown Heights, and I am really glad I'm on fluoxetine because probably would have had a panic attack about all the unmasked people walking by us, which is not like a just Hasidic Crown Heights thing, but
no,
there were more people.
You find walking around New York at all to
at
be
all.
A stressful thing.
Right.
There's just a lot more people around here.
Yeah, please wear masks when you're going in public, because again, this is a respiratory pandemic, and your breath doesn't magically disappear because you're outside.
Anyway.
Yes, sorry. Hi. It was a nice walk around, seeing people who live pretty close but are a different community. Point is, it was people that I definitely don't see in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting seeing some of the, like, doctrinal accoutrement of the
Because we went to 770?
Chassidim, yeah. There was a lot about HaMashiach. One of the things that I care less about in Judaism, and also, we talked about the ambiguity of a lot of the statements, but also half of them were accompanied by a literal dude. So, no disrespect to Schneerson. Jazz, what do you think you want to, like, isolate?
I think one of the things that's been really nice was when we went apple picking together.
Mm-hmm.
So, we had a double date with one of my roommates, with Tori and Allison, and we went to an apple orchard, and there are so many kinds of apples. We did apples because Lulav's here during the high holidays.
Yeah. Also, I've never been apple picking before.
Really?
Yeah. It was a fun experience.
The person at the front who greeted us was, like, very eager to direct us and be like, this one is for sweet apples, and this one is for tart apples, and I am sure you
gotta have Cortland's for cooking.
And we had a great time exploring the apple orchards. I put apple leaves in Lulav's hair, and we got so many apples.
Between the two couples, we got an entire bushel of apples.
We got so many apples. I made delicious applesauce, which I feel really happy about. I think Allison made some apple cakes. We gave some apples away. We're maybe making some apple cider. It was a great trip.
Also, so this isn't just Jazz hyping themselves up. They did make really good applesauce. It's delicious.
Thank you. Thank you for attesting.
Yeah, another thing about both of those excursions that stands out to me is, like, I got to be a tall girl with a short person, and we got to walk arm in arm, and it was just really nice and gay.
It was really good. I'm not that short. I'm only short comparatively to you.
Listen, I'm from the Midwest, which is full of milk-fed beauties, and we are gargantuan.
Fair enough. I am not a milk-fed beauty because milk disagrees with my system.
Wait, which came first? The lack of milk or the lack of ability to digest milk?
The lack of ability to digest milk. Okay. I had milk growing up.
Okay.
And then I got hit with a bad case of Ashkenazi stomach.
Crossing my fingers.
Yeah.
So, do you want to, like, get into the Haftarah?
I do. I understand that you wrote a summary for us of the first Parsha.
I did. I also, with your help, wrote an introduction to our podcast.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Kosher Queers, a podcast with at least 2 Jews and generally more than 3 opinions. Each week we bring you queer takes on Torah. They're Jazz.
And she's Lulav.
And we're here to joke about Judaism and talk Tanakh together. This week, our Chavruta is learning. How are we talking about this?
This is a really good question. So we, I think, can say we're doing the Haftarah for Parshat Bereshit, which is an excerpt of 1 Shmuel
18 to 42. Yeah. So it was very fun, very gay, and I can tell you a little bit about the much longer Parsha that it's connected to.
Please, and then I want to hear your best theories on how it's connected.
Okay. So, can you give me 45 seconds?
Yes. Ready, set, go.
One day, nothing flinched, and there the world was. Waters from waters, dark from light, crawlers from swimmers. We get a bunch of divisions which explain the messy rainbow of phenomena in our world. Or maybe there's another story of a specific man made from earth and breath to work a specific land, of this man naming the world's living things and finding no true companion, of one being crafted for him. The two learn a division by osmosis, good from bad. Because of this, they may have neither haven nor ease of life. The world's first fratricide occurs because, I mean, have you ever tried to keep kids from hitting each other with rocks when they're mildly disappointed? We wrap this barn burner of a parsha up with a whole bunch of numbers, plus also it's big boy season, plus also Hashem has depression.
That was great.
Thank you.
I feel vaguely reminded that in the distant past of about a year ago, we didn't actually write a proper summary because for our first episode, we just kind of...
We're stumbling through it.
Yeah. So thank you for that beautiful summary.
Aw, thank you. I mean, you're welcome. I'm great.
You're great.
Jazz. Oh, how does it connect?
How does it connect?
Right. We're still getting used to this format, too. So when I think about the Parsha Bereshit, I think about the creation of the world and Adam and Chava, but I think this connects a little bit more to the Cain and Abel story.
Okay.
Because in the Cain and Abel story, Abel brings some really nice offerings, and so Cain is jealous of how much attention he gets and kills him for it. In the bit that we're about to read, you have David, who has just come from a bunch of military victories that get him a lot of acclaim from the people of Israel. And that makes King Saul very mad at him, and he wants to kill him.
Sure, yeah.
Does that seem like a reasonable connection?
It does seem like a good argument.
Heck yeah.
My only additional thing to add...
Oh?
Is that in the Parsha, we're dealing with the creation of the world,
mm-hmm.
and here we're dealing with our first on-screen gay romance, and Sarah.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
So it feels like an appropriate way for us to open season two, and I'm so delighted that we get to go right from, hey, the beginning of the world, to, hey, here's the first Jewish gay people that we know about, even though...
Yeah, haven't we seen a whole bunch of Jewish gay people already? Yeah. But that was all subtextual. This is
very textual. The others, like, listen, we can read ourselves into our other historical figures, and more power to all of those readings. I have seen really beautiful ones. David and Jonathan do not require any subtextual reading. They're just very blatantly there.
It, in fact, requires subtextual reading to think they're not gay for each other.
Yeah.
So.
On that note.
Can you tell us a little bit of the context around...
Right. So we plop into this excerpt that we're reading for the Haftarah, 2018. And actually, for this week, because it's our first week of the Haftarah, I want to say a little bit more about, like, just how a Haftarah works. For people who might not be familiar with it, because I first encountered the idea of a Haftarah when I was preparing for my B'nai Mitzvah at like age 13. And so a Haftarah portion is chanted like a Torah portion, and they use the same markings, but they sound differently.
What?
There's a few differences between them, but one of the differences is that Torah trope is kind of chanted in a major key and Haftarah is in a minor key.
Well,
I'm not a music person.
I took Intro to Music Theory, and that's definitely a thing that exists, but I couldn't tell you more about it anymore.
Last time I knew a lot about the differences about major and minor key was when I was, like, playing piano when I was, like, 13. So, but it is, like, a different set of tunes.
Oh, I think it's, like, the number of half steps between notes in the chord?
I really don't know.
It's been a minute.
But... They have a different tune and a different intro blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're at a weekend service, like a Shabbat service, there will be the Torah reading, and there will be, like, the different aliyot of people who come up and read different sections of the Parsha, and then they'll read the Haftarah in the different trope at the end after the Parsha.
Oh, and because it's only, like, 20 lines, that's a nice wrap-up to...
Right. Oh, so when I was preparing for mine, the way that we did it was I read, like, one of the aliyot for the Parsha itself, and then I did Haftarah. Okay, but so back to this week. David, who you may remember from the famous story of David and Goliath, is a, like, initially non-famous guy who then ends up as King David. And we are in the intervening years when he has sort of risen through the ranks, and he is both a soldier in the armies of King Saul, and he is, I think... I actually didn't double check this, so I don't remember if he is yet married to Saul's daughter.
Not that that, you know, comes up very much, but...
Hasn't come up in this story, but I think he is married to Saul's daughter already.
Which would actually explain one of the lines that Saul says, right? We'll get there.
And David's very, very popular with all of the people, and Saul is very worried about his popularity. Like, there's a famous line where, like, they both get welcomed back to the city after a military campaign, and the people are singing, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. And Saul is like, oh no, they're gonna make him king. Also, Saul is, like, pretty textually devolving into paranoia and, like, mm-hmm. deep-seated mental illness and, like, pretty explicitly losing his ability to be the ruler he previously had been. And that's where we start this week.
Can I give a little context for my reading of this Haftarah portion?
Please.
So most of my imagery for this comes from the NBC show Kings, which I believe we've mentioned on the podcast before, but I'm not entirely sure. So anytime that Yohanan is mentioned, I am picturing Sebastian Stan.
Oh no.
And anytime that Saul is mentioned, I'm picturing Edward James Olmos.
Okay. What about David?
He was just some milk-fed beady from the Midwest, I think.
And what was the NBC show Kings for the people who didn't watch that show that ran for like one or two seasons?
Short-lived.
Yeah, a decade ago.
It was like a modern retelling in like a weird fantasy, like very low fantasy. It wasn't magical. It was just like, this is unlike the world, but also they have like aughts era skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. And when David slays the Goliath, it's instead of a big man, it's just a tank that he, like, as an infantryman, exploits turn radius of or something.
Fun.
And blows up.
Okay.
And so I think the equivalent to, like, Saul has slain his thousands and David has slain his tens of thousands is they were, like, at a fundraiser and it was Saul has raised his millions, but David has raised his tens of millions. Which was hilarious. Anyway, we can get into it.
That's a delight. Okay, so... David has just said to Jonathan, I have to hide away because your dad is going to kill me. And mm-hmm. Jonathan is like, my dad wouldn't kill you. He would tell me if he was going to kill anybody. He tells me stuff like that. And David...
Can't you just imagine how wounded Sebastian Stan is?
David's like, he wouldn't do that because he knows you like me. And so Jonathan's like, okay, we'll test it. You should, like, hide out for a couple days, and if my father gets upset about it, we'll know he didn't intend to hurt you. And if he's chill about it, we'll know he didn't intend to hurt you. Then they, like, pledge this deep commitment to each other and note again that Jonathan loved David as himself. So that's where we pick up. Jonathan says to him, tomorrow will be the new moon and you will be missed. And then they come up with this plot where Jonathan...
is a sporty boy.
Yeah, and Jonathan is like, I'm going to shoot some arrows, and depending on which instructions I call out to the servant whose job it is to go pick up the arrows, you'll know whether you should run away because my dad wants to kill you, or whether it's safe for you to come home. And David agrees to this coded message plan.
This is a level of coding that I'm, like, impressed by. Like... for people who presumably haven't been under threat of being killed by King Saul before.
It's true.
And good operational security.
Yeah. I mean, David is a soldier. He's also, like, a musician, like, but he's not exactly a lover, not a fighter, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, so then David went and hid in the field for a while. The new moon came, and they were gonna have, like, these 3 days of feasting. On the first day, David wasn't there, and Saul was like, maybe he's just missed it by accident.
This is what I'm talking about with the good operational security. They wait a second day.
Right, and then on the second day, David also wasn't there, and Saul asked Jonathan, oh, why didn't he come? And Jonathan said, well, he asked if he could go visit his family, because they're having the festival celebration too. And I said, sure, you can go visit your family for a few days. And Saul is apoplectic. And does this entire homophobic rant.
Mm-hmm. I see it less as homophobic, but okay. That might be part of it.
What do you see it as?
Okay, so can you first point out what parts of this read is homophobic?
When he curses out Jonathan, he does so as, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, you're siding with this other boy, and it's your shame and the shame specifically of your mother's nakedness. I think it is an implied, one, you have chosen this person over your family, two, you have done so in a way that involves sexual shame.
Okay. I just don't think that there's three, the sexual shame comes from the variety of sex itself, the fact that it is with a man. I am very much reading one and two, though.
Well, I think it is partially because if he had slept with a woman, or fallen in love with a woman, Saul would not have seen his kingdom as being a threat. Right? He sees his kingdom as being a threat specifically because David's a man.
Partly, yes. But also, isn't he married to his daughter?
Yes.
And aren't there prohibitions on doing sexual things with the sibling of your spouse?
Probably.
Right. So I think that's what "to the shame of your mother's nakedness" is referring to. Is like, hey, you were kissing on this boy, he's married to your sister, you can't do that. And then, as a separate thing, like, as long as the son of Yishai lives on Earth, neither you nor your kingship will be secure, because, like, this guy is super popular, and he's married into the royal family, so you have to be especially careful with how you treat him.
Sure, but it wasn't you have to be especially careful about how you treat him, because the next line is, bring him to me and let me kill him.
Also, one other thing that I want to mention is, I don't think there's homophobia here necessarily. There is misogyny. Like, yes, of course it is his mother's fault.
Why is it his mother's fault? Yeah, you're right.
Also, again, we haven't looked into the whole story's context, but maybe his mom was also gay. In which case, there would be homophobia here. Alas.
I like that belief. Because I am here for second generation queers.
Always in favor of gay moms?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Also, Saul seems like an unfortunate person to have to be married to at this particular moment.
Yeah. Like, given how he takes out his anger on his son, can you walk us through that part?
Yeah. So Jonathan is arguing and is like, well, why should he be put to death? He hasn't done anything to us. And Saul throws his spear at him, like, as if he's gonna kill him. And Jonathan is like, oh, wow, he really is gonna kill David, huh? So Jonathan leaves, furious.
Side note, do you think that this was literally he was throwing his spear at him to kill him? Or is it, like, when men punch the wall and it's basically a sign that, like, they could be hurting you, but they have decided to take it out on inanimate objects instead?
I've seen different interpretations, and I don't know about you, but I have read versions of this story that have been, like, fictionalized a couple times. Like, there are novelizations of David's life of varying quality that exist out there, and I hope that there's one that, like, appropriately handles his relationship with Jonathan, but most of them that I have seen do not. Like,
yeah.
The one that I remember most vividly is focused on Michal's perspective, and that's who cool.
Sister?
Who is the sister. Okay. And she's cool. I'm happy to have a book from her perspective.
Yeah.
She does definitely believe that David and Jonathan are in love. Like, that is part of what's happening in that book, but it's, like, not from either of their perspectives. Right. So I...
Yeah.
But that interpretation, if I remember correctly, had it framed as, like, really Saul was kind of fraying and having a time, and so it wasn't so much a, like, I am determined to kill him, so much as, like, I am furious, and this is not a gesture of intention one way or another, so much as just, like, an impulse gesture of fury.
And is that your favorite reading of this particular bit?
I think it depends how you want to read Saul, and I think there are a couple really valid ways to read Saul here, and I do think that there's something to be said for a reading where his paranoia has gotten the better of him and is, like, slowly eating away at the best parts of himself, such that first it turns on David, and then it starts turning on his own family as well.
Yeah. And, like, I think I like a reading... Because, okay, what I remember of NBC's Kings is that Saul had really inconsistent characterization, which I think was consistent with the original text, but it was, like, a very facile reading, I guess. I think a reasonable way to read this is that Saul is actually, like, not capital P, but capital P paranoid, that, like, he's having increasingly bad mental illness and...
But I also think there's a version of this, like, I don't want to be like, he's mentally ill and therefore dangerous.
Right.
Right? And that's part of why reading it as homophobia is useful to me.
Okay.
Like, it's not that he was mentally ill and that was the problem. It's that he was powerful and bigoted.
Right.
And when he began to lose some of his inhibitions, those things just came to the forefront very strongly, and so he acted in a way that was always within him.
Absolutely.
Because that was the type of person he was. Like, he lost some of the social graces that allowed him to get away with it, and became just much more nakedly the person he was.
Yeah. Thank you for phrasing it that way. I was having a hard time making the words be the thing. So.
But anyway, so Jonathan leaves. Like, I am out. And
does... Sebastian Stan's eyes are just glistening with tears.
And does this code thing with the servant boy that's like, I shot some arrows, and Jonathan calls out, hey, the arrows are behind you! Quick, quick, hurry up, don't stop! And therefore David knows, oh, I gotta keep running and can't stay here.
Yeah, that was part of the code that they hadn't agreed to, was the, like, quick, hurry up, don't stop! So, like, clearly he's really shaken by that particular encounter.
Yeah.
And probably feeling really betrayed, because this is the same Sebastian Stan who started a little before this portion, saying... No, my dad would never kill you. That's ridiculous. I would know about it.
So,
and one other thing that I just wanted to point out is you told it kind of in reverse order. What does it say here?
He said to the boy, run ahead and find the arrows that I shoot. And,
right?
And
as, like, the present tense shoot.
And as the boy ran, he shot the arrows past him.
Which is, please don't do this to your caddies. Not that, like, anyone listening to this probably has caddies, but if you are ever in an archery range, stop firing when there are people walking on the range to retrieve arrows.
The only comparison I know of, like, a thing where people use caddies in more modern day, I mean, maybe I just don't know that many archers, but, like, golf caddies are also a thing?
Oh, that's why I was saying caddy.
Okay, but, like, cute, but also... Probably not a great idea to do to your golf people either. You get hurt by being hit in the head with anything if it's going fast enough.
True. Also, again, I'm pretty sure nobody here, like, plays golf at the country club, but tip your caddies, especially during a pandemic. We're getting way off topic.
Anyway, so David and Jonathan go meet up, and this is the very end of our Haftarah segment for the day. I just want to read it directly in the English for you. David flung himself face down on the ground and bowed low three times. They kissed each other and wept together. David wept the longer. Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we two have sworn to each other. May God be between you and me, and between your offspring and mine, forever.
She's adorable. It's like if you... who are apparently a gay man, tell your gay male partner, like, I want to be in the nursing home on rocking chairs with you and just talking about our kids who also love each other.
It's cute.
Yeah. So, I don't think that this was accurately represented in Kings, but David wept the longer That is such a GIF set caption. Like, I can see a Tumblr where you're just scrolling down and it's like David all messy and flinging himself face down on the ground and lots of kissing. And it's just David wept the longer. So yeah, that's the Haftarah.
Incredibly gay. We don't even, like, I think there will be times where we have to do more interpretive work. I feel like there have been people who have went out of their way to find a reading of this that wasn't gay. It's just, like, right. That's the surface meaning of it.
Mm-hmm. And, like, sure, there are cultural differences with what it means for men to kiss other men. They're gay. Come on.
David and Jonathan are also the ones where they say pretty clearly later, like, I think it is David who, when Jonathan dies, is, like, so torn up about it and then writes heartfelt poetry about it and then says sadly to somebody else, you know, his love was more precious to me than the love of any woman.
Right? Right? You have to try and also fail to find a heterosexual reading of that.
They swap clothing at one point, not on page right now.
Thank you! God. Okay, I think this brings us to a segment called Rating God's Writing, where we invent very basic scales and just ask each other to rate the Haftarah on them. So Jazz, out of 3 arrows and 3 kisses, what would you rate this Haftarah?
I would rate this Haftarah portion 2 kisses and 3 arrows. I think it's great. I really liked it. I'm excited that we got to start with it. I have some hesitancy about giving it arrows. They seem to not have very good safety practices with it, but I think it definitely deserves a full 2 out of 2 kisses. 1 for David.
Wait,
to give to
3?
You gave me 2 kisses. Did and I? 3 arrows.
Oh no, okay. Keep going.
1 kiss for David to give to Jonathan and 1 for Jonathan to give to David.
That's cute.
And arrows that they can use to fight off all of the homophobia of their dad's veneer of caring falling away.
Yeah. So what do you have for me?
So for you, out of 1 outfit that you've swapped with a partner, what clothing pieces would you give to this Haftarah? What is it wearing?
It is wearing official What Pumpkin merch Hero of Breath hoodie.
Okay.
Because that is the gay article of clothing I gave to you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's clearly these two people mean a lot to each other, and uh-huh. Oh my god, this is so gay, I'm sorry. Yeah, clearly they mean a lot to each other, and, like, they want a life together, even if that means going against the literal king and also father of them. So, is there any other part of the outfit?
I feel like probably one of them has to be wearing something else in addition to a hoodie, but...
Probably some nice socks.
Nice.
Which is drawn from fiction.
Okay.
Because I only wear tights.
Great. I think that brings us to the end of our episode. It's a little bit shorter than our Parsha episodes, which is exciting.
Jazz, can you take us to the close?
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Kosher Queers. If you like what you've heard, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/kosherqueers, which will give you bonus content and help us keep making this for you. You can also follow us on Twitter at Kosher Queers, or like us on Facebook at Kosher Queers, or email us your questions, comments, and concerns at kosherqueers@gmail.com. And please spread the word about our podcast. Our artwork is by the talented Lior Gross. Our music is courtesy of the fabulous band Brivola, whose work you can find on Bandcamp. Go buy their album. They're great. Our sound production this week is done by my lovely co-host, Lulav Arnau.
All I can think of is, like, Riley from Buffy, but those might have been 2 separate milk-fed beauties. I just don't know. Our transcript team of Jazz, Ruben, Diko, and Chesed brings you full transcripts of every episode. You can find a link to those in the episode descriptions on Buzzsprout.
And hopefully soon on our website, so that will be exciting.
Heck yeah.
I'm Jazz Twersky, and you can find me at WordNerdKnitter on Twitter.
I'm Lulav Arnau, and you can find me at SpaceTruck6 on Twitter. Or yell at me at PalmLiker.
We recorded this audio on the traditional lands of the Lenape people. Have a lovely queer Jewish day. This week's gender is... sorry, already promised elsewhere.
This week's pronouns are Lee, Lim, and Liz.